So I'm here at the People's Social Forum in Ottawa with Yaffa Jarar, who is a Palestinian-Palestine solidarity activist. We're going to be speaking about a number of different issues. But first, Yaffa, I guess an issue that touches really close to home is something that's happened to your mother lately, Khalida Jarar, who is a member of the Palestinian Legislative Council, also a longtime activist with the PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. She was just ordered an internal expulsion order by Israeli occupation forces on Tuesday. That sounds like a bit of a Kafkaesque thing, an internal expulsion order. But maybe can you tell us what exactly that is, and tell us what's happening with your mother, Khalida Jarar, right now?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yes, as you mentioned, my mother, I mean, about 50 Israeli soldiers raided our house on Tuesday.
In Ramallah?
In Ramallah, yeah. So that's in the West Bank, in area so-called A, which is technically or supposedly an area A under the Oslo Agreement, must be under the Palestinian Authority control. Now, of course, with the so-called security collaboration and cooperation between the Palestinian Authority and Israeli forces, the Israeli forces invade and raid very freely. And in this very example, they handed my mother a military court order to be deported from the city where she lives, which is Ramallah, to another Area A city, which is Jericho. This is something that hasn't happened since the 80s. It's quite unique, and all we can say, and how she sees it, how we see it, is that this is just a form of punishment. It's just one way of Israeli authorities and the Israeli apartheid state practicing some of their apartheid policy continuously with impunity. Mm-hmm. So this is just one form of it. We're also very puzzled by this. On one hand, my mother is an activist like most Palestinians. We live under occupation. We live under an apartheid regime. On the other, she's an elected member of parliament. Mm-hmm. And in her case, so far, the Palestinian Authority has not in any way said anything about this decision or court order. Now, just in terms of quick updates, my mother refused to comply with the order. She remains in Ramallah. She moved from, they gave her a 24-hour period to remove herself from the city of Ramallah to the city of Jericho, and they handed her a map of the limits of the city of Jericho where she's not allowed to leave. She announced that she refuses to comply with this arbitrary order, and then she emphasized that we are people under continuous occupation. These kinds of acts are only some of the outrageous acts that are committed by the Israeli apartheid state, such as murdering people, such as continuing the siege on Gaza, bombing civilians, arresting people, expelling and deporting, theft of land, etc. So she just moved now to a protest tent. She's tenting at the Legislative Council until the decision is revoked.
Mm-hmm. Now, this isn't actually a unique measure that the Israeli occupation forces have done. There have been other examples of, I guess, almost like deporting Palestinians from their own land, which is already occupied. Can you maybe like tell us a little bit more about this wider practice of internal expulsion?
In terms of internal expulsion, as I mentioned, in terms of military Israeli military court order, it hasn't been issued since the 1980s. Now, in terms of systematic deportation and expulsion of Palestinian people, it's been happening continuously since 1948. And this takes place in many different shapes and forms. Some Palestinians who are now refugees are have been expelled from their homes in 48. Areas to the West Bank. Some have been expelled outside of Palestine to refugee camps in Jordan and Syria and Lebanon, etc. And others are in exile elsewhere, all over the world. But to issue, and again, this is why I'm mentioning this situation is kind of unique, and there is nothing, it's not news that Israel would commit such a thing or issue such a decision that doesn't make sense. Of course, this particular decision violates Article 49 of the Geneva Convention, mm-hmm. That basically states protecting civilians under a situation of war or occupation, mm-hmm. in which case they have violated not just this article, but so many international mm-hmm. laws.
It also mentions, because you brought up the Geneva Convention, mm-hmm. The Geneva Convention prohibits there's a condition around prohibiting assigned residence or something like that. Maybe I got that wrong, but specifically around this, how does the Geneva Convention relate to that?
Right. Well, one of the main things that they're in violation of is transferring civilians from one area to another in occupied territories. This is a clear violation of international law and particularly Geneva Convention. So by doing so, Israel, and again, I just want to go back to the point before of why this is a unique situation, is because, as we know, after the signing of the Oslo Agreement, which we still suffer from today, supposedly they created areas of different control for the Palestinian Authority. Some are shared, some under Israeli military control. And in this case, they are removing a person from one area that is supposedly under Palestinian Authority control to another area that is supposedly under Palestinian Authority control. Mm. So we don't see this, we don't see anything in this except for it's a form of humiliation and punishment. And if she doesn't comply, she's under the threat of being arrested by Israeli authorities. Meanwhile, it also shows the failure of our own Palestinian Authority and so-called leadership in protecting their own people and the Palestinians, let alone their elected legislators. It's just a complete shame. It's humiliating, it's embarrassing. And again, it's just one form of Israel practicing its continuous oppression and apartheid policies with impunity. Mm-hmm.
I want to turn the attention to Ottawa and the unceded Algonquin territory that we're on right now. We've been focusing a lot on anti-colonial issues throughout the People's Social Forum. And I'm wondering maybe, you know, what are some of, like, I guess the overarching currents and similarities and ties that you can see between the indigenous struggle in Palestine and indigenous struggles here on Turtle Island?
Yes, of course. And we always have to recognize, and for me as a settler on this land, we always have to recognize in our work and organizing, but also in our learning and mind and teaching and all of it, consciousness that we cannot, and I'm speaking now as a Palestinian and as a Palestine solidarity activist, we cannot meaningfully talk about the liberation of Palestine in this context here on unceded Algonquin territory or any other territory. We cannot talk about the liberation of the Palestinians and Palestine meaningfully without being in solidarity with the indigenous people everywhere. Mm-hmm. And in this case, particularly the people that we, you know, the people of this land and of this territory. And this would include, being in solidarity includes being a part of their campaigns, being in continuous communication with them, because this is what makes us stronger. One of the things that unites us is that as Palestinians and as indigenous people here in Turtle Island, is that we're both subject to colonial projects. Now, colonial projects differ, but they have a lot of striking similarities that we see. History repeats itself, greed repeats itself, and manifests itself in many different ways. And we see a lot of similarities in terms of the actual apartheid policies that exist, let's say, in Palestine by the Israeli apartheid regime and the policies that the indigenous people have been subject to here in Turtle Island and in particularly here in Canada. Residential schools, different forms of projects that led slowly to what is called or used as ethnic cleansing of certain people, separation, legal separation. We see it here with the reserve system. Residential schools, people still suffer from it until today. And same in Palestine. We see these kind of legal separations and slow genocide and ethnic cleansing. In many ways, it's slow, but we have been seeing it happening quicker with the situation in Gaza recently. So again, the one thing that I have learned growing up in Palestine as an indigenous Palestinian person who lived under apartheid, under occupation, under colonization, and now I am a settler on this colonized land, is that I have always learned, not only from the teaching of my parents, but also my own experience, that we must always be in solidarity, in meaningful communication with all oppressed peoples around the world, all colonized people around the world, because there would be no liberation of one people as long as there is other people who are still colonized and not liberated.
Mm. I mean, I think part of meeting here at the People's Social Forum is to have some of that, as you're saying, meaningful communication, different movements coming together to talk about these issues. But maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on that idea of meaningful communication between movements. How do you see that happening?
There are many different venues for this to happen. And I think, well, we can start from the deliberate attempts from, let's say, the state, different agencies of the state. And I'm here talking about a colonial state, whether be it Canada or Israel. Deliberate attempts to not have that communication going between, let's say, us in Palestine and other oppressed people around the world. And what I mean by deliberate attempts to prevent that from happening is through propaganda, is through arranging, in this particular case, trips, for example, by certain indigenous peoples to Israel and trying to spread brainwashing ideas and that kind of stuff. The reason why they do that is because they know there's danger in having any kind of solidarity between different oppressed people. So one way is to actually learn about each other's history. So it is my responsibility as a settler on this land, while I advocate for Palestinian rights, to also learn and be an advocate for indigenous rights and learn about their histories and learn my positionality as a settler here. Mm-hmm. Because if I don't do that, then my work for the liberation of Palestine is simply meaningless. It's farce. It would be farce. So there would be a lot of hypocrisy happening there. So that is one way when I talk about meaningful communication. Mm-hmm. Now, as a Palestinian also, it is my responsibility to spread that within the Palestinian community here. Mm-hmm. Other forms of communication when I talk about that is actually being part listening, first of all, listening to each other's needs and wants and calls for solidarity and doing it. Mm. So simply doing it and being there and speaking out and being part of these campaigns and listening to the people and what they want. And I think this would be an amazing recipe for a potentially successful liberation project that would take a long time. Mm. And a lot, it would take not just a long time, but it would take a lot of patience. And it would take a lot to move beyond our prejudice and beyond our privileges and move beyond the inability to act to the ability to actually do something and use our positionality to do something strong together.
Mm. Lastly, Yaffa, at the People's Social Forum here in Ottawa, there's going to be a movement assembly on Palestine, maybe specifically looking at what's been happening in Gaza, the atrocities committed there over the last month, mm-hmm. but looking at how we can move forward in terms of maybe taking the tragedy as a call to deepen our solidarity with Palestine. What are you hoping might come out of an assembly like that.
Mm-hmm. So the one thing that the Palestinians have made it so easy for us here to do and work upon, and the assembly will be addressing that and will be taking that on, is the call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions against Israel. As we have been seeing in the past month, but also in the past many years of Israel's action, is that Israel has been testing the international community over and over and over again to see how far they can go with their invasions, with their massacres, with their oppressions, with impunity and without having any kind of accountability to their actions. They've been testing the international community because they have tested on smaller scales before to see if there's going to be any kind of objections or voices raised, and the international community basically allowed Israel to continue with what it's doing without any of that, right? So this is what we mean. And as we know, the call that came from Palestine in 2005 for boycott, divestment, and sanctions basically is a toolbox that the Palestinians, based on the model of South Africa and boycotting South African apartheid regime, a recipe, a toolbox for us here to stand in solidarity, in meaningful solidarity with the Palestinian people. So how this would translate into different things, this is where BDS becomes a beautiful creative thing, is that BDS doesn't tell us how to do BDS, or it tells us how, but it doesn't tell us, you know, there's no manual for it. So we could implement it in so many different venues. So labor unions would take that call and you know, look into their pension funds and divest from companies that have any relationship with supporting the Israeli apartheid regime, or weapon companies that produce weapons to systematically kill and oppress people in Palestine and elsewhere. Churches may take a different route. Synagogues may take a different routes in terms of how to implement boycotts. People will choose, like they have, to do consumer boycotts, such as SodaStream and many different companies, working around campaigns to end contracts with corporations that support and sustain the apartheid regime in Palestine, like we saw with G4S, for example. So again, there are so many different ways of how students, student unions, the Ontario Student University Unions just endorsed BDS. And there are many, many, many different examples. Launching campaigns on our campuses and universities to cut to end any kind of exchange programs with Israeli academic institutions. Artists here in Ottawa, a couple of years ago, started a cultural boycott campaign, and there are many influential artists who are Ottawa-based who signed on it and can continue to support it and commit to the cultural boycott. So I think this is where the assembly becomes important, because the People's Social Forum is a venue that is hosting so people from so many different walks of life who come together to discuss many different issues, but also unite on so many others, such as basic principles of justice, equality, fairness, all of that, anti-colonialism, anti-oppression. So these kind of the general principles that bring us together. And this is where it will become important. This is a very important venue to kind of have that direct and a clear communication with other groups, establishing that kind of solidarity, see what we can provide as Palestine solidarity activists, but also how other groups can be on board in terms of standing in solidarity. This also, just my last point on this, brings us to the fact that the form of solidarity here that we're talking about is not the same to be seen as a form of charity, right? So we're doing meaningful solidarity in the sense that we believe that we are actors that are not neutral in this situation. So when it comes to the situation in Palestine, and we come together in the assembly or any other workshop or any other BDS campaign, we're not talking about people who look at a certain issue and say, there's injustice happening here and I want to go get involved, right? No, we're actually here particularly people, their tax money, their any kind of investment, their pension funds, their elected government officials are complicit and active in sustaining what's happening in Palestine, the oppression that's happening in Palestine. There's military funding that goes from this very government towards the Israeli military to sustain that. So we're not neutral when we talk about this. So this kind of will encourage us to think about solidarity in a different way. It's responsibility as well, right, for us to be doing that. And again, the Palestinians have made it beautifully accessible, let's say, by presenting BDS to people here so they can take ownership and initiative in terms of implementing it on the ground.
Again, we've been speaking with Yaffa Jarar, who's a Palestinian activist here in Ottawa at the People's Social Forum. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.